Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast to awaken from a thousand-year slumber to deliver unto you the terrible truth behind anime Fall 2024 anime season premieres.
Explosion.
It is anime season. We've overslept a little bit, but we've awoken to the premieres of the season fall 2024 anime.
We've been slow walking it a little bit. That's okay. You know, there's a lot coming out. And to be fair, we did do the episode where we looked ahead at the upcoming season. And at the time, I believe we kind of were a bit dismayed. We felt that it was a bit weak. This upcoming season, and I don't know about you, you know, we'll get into it, but I think I ended up enjoying more shows than I thought I would this premiere round. Yeah, I think I did.
Interesting. I think I might have had the opposite experience.
You're
then.
Going the other way. You hated more things than you thought you would.
I despised them. I watched a fair amount. We tried to get all of them out of the way, so I watched a pretty good chunk of these premieres, and I had a lot of upsets, let's say. I made some predictions early on, and the reality has come crashing down around me, but I think what we should do, just as a neat and orderly way to do this, is just kind of take them one at a time. We have a list of premieres, and we're just going to bash through these things. This is anime 2024 fall season of anime.
Spooktober Megafest.
October Megafest. Now, the first thing, we're going to start off with a little bit of a... we're already derailed, but the first thing is... Look Back, the movie premiere.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. It happened.
Fujimoto taking the U.S. by storm. Absolute comet force of a rising career.
Tatsuki Fujimoto is up here in my local theater bringing the heat?
I mean, it is...
Are you kidding me?
It is crazy, you know, considering, like, how much he obviously loves film. And yeah. He does. Like, he, you know, he references a lot of movies in all of his manga.
He's gone full Tarantino multiple times.
Yeah. Well, I think he was always Tarantino. He's been Tarantinoing Tarantino since the start.
I would say from reading, first of all, the first short story collection and then into Fire Punch, I think he has developed more Tarantino as time has gone by.
He's let the guards down, you know, progressively.
Yeah, The short stories are there's very little Tarantino molecules in the short stories. And then Fire Punch happens, and it doesn't have a lot of Tarantino molecules, but they do build up to the point where we meet that character who is essentially a Tarantino.
Yeah. And what I always considered to be a author insert type character in many ways.
Yeah, so it feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then in Look Back... Jumping off of Fire Punch is very much, I mean, we really shouldn't read, you know, authors into their works. Like, there is the death of the author, all that stuff. But it is very difficult to watch or read Look Back and not project Fujimoto into it. Because it's about
making manga.
A character whose entire life revolves around drawing manga and becoming a popular mangaka and having a lot of complicated feelings about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the simplest possible explanation of Look Back. And the amount of Chainsaw Man references that they slip into the movie, by the way, makes it, again, very difficult not to read Fujimoto into the character of Ayase?
Ayase.
Ayase? Yeah. Ayase and Kiyomoto. And I think... That's kind of like what makes it so strong is obviously like somebody writing about their own very strong emotions about the thing they are doing. It's a kind of a cliche in the art world, and especially the movie world, where like people love to make movies about people making movies, right?
That's what I was about to say. That's like the trope in Hollywood, is they're all they love, you know, jacking themselves off about how cool it is to make movies.
Yeah, there are so many movies about making movies. And obviously there are so many novels about struggling authors, you know. Yeah. That's an entire genre unto itself.
I think creators just like to emphasize their own perceived struggle in their stories, right? Everyone,
well, sure,
likes to make themselves out to be the hero.
Well, you know, you remember what they told us like in high school when we were doing like English class, right? And you had to like write something, and they're like, well, I don't know what to write, and they'd be like, write what you know, right? That's like the first thing anybody learns about creative writing.
Well, I know about being a dipshit high schooler from Central yeah, California.
I guess I'll write about being a dipshit high schooler. I guess that's how creative fiction works.
Yeah.
But I think in this case, like, he essentially does that. He's like, I'm gonna write what I know, and what I know is like being extremely uncomfortable about my own creative process, but it works so well. I kind of have a hard time figuring out why, because I've read and seen other manga and anime about writing manga and anime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they were bad. Like, you know, self-indulgent and boring.
I think part of it is that Fujimoto, and I don't know if this is something that he's talked about like in interviews, but to me, just the way he comes off in like the peripheral stuff that I've read around Chainsaw Man and his other works,
mm-hmm,
he seems like he has a massive case of imposter syndrome when he comes to thinking about his own creative process. You know, he didn't go to art school. He says in a couple different places that he's entirely self-taught in terms of drawing like human figures and action scenes.
Sure.
And he has to rely on the help from a lot of assistants to get the backgrounds looking as good as they do.
Yeah. When he represents that, you know, in Look Back, because the character that his, you know, again, we probably shouldn't call her a self-insert, but it's hard not to.
We can say that she is composed of parts of the author without saying that she's a one-to-one self-insert.
Sure, sure, yeah. The character of ISA is incredibly jealous of Kiyomoto, who draws in a art school style, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, that is one of the central conflicts. And that character representing, like, the desire to go to art school and become better on a technical level, and that pisses ISA off, right? Feels so real and powerful. And in the manga, because it's Fujimoto drawing his own thing, like, it really, really hits. So I was very worried that Look Back would be kind of a watered-down version, because it is somebody covering, essentially, the manga. That's how it works. And when I watched the interviews, it also seemed like Fujimoto was very hands-off. He didn't really have anything to do with the movie. So I was a little worried about it, but I went to the theater and I sat my ass down and I watched it, and I cried. I cried a lot. It's a really emotional movie.
People were uncomfortable. Yeah. You know, they people don't. We're not in an age where people accept a 8.5 foot tall, muscle bound, hairy man openly crying in the theater. It puts them off a little bit.
Yes, I did sit in the back just to make sure that I wouldn't, you know, upset other people. But I definitely cried a little bit, and I was absolutely fucking enraptured because, they fucking killed it. It looks so good.
I mean, that's really a huge relief to hear, considering that probably a lot of animators lost out on time with their families, like time to do stuff for themselves, on top of probably not getting paid very well to begin with. So, kudos to Studio MAPPA. Was this MAPPA? I'm just projecting at this point.
They make everything now, right?
Yeah, they make everything.
I'm not sure who produced it, but it is a very small production. You know, the movie's only 58 minutes. It's not even feature length, but it feels complete.
Oh, really? I was unaware of that.
Yeah, but you don't notice it in the movie because, again, like the story beats and the story itself is so tight. It just feels right. And, you know, as we have said many times, we are both proponents of shorter movies. I feel like I'm completely vindicated watching this movie. I was correct. Shorter movies rock. They don't have to be 2.5 hours long. That usually sucks. You don't need to tack on a fourth act to make a movie work. And that probably helped the animators, right? That it was only they're hitting 58 minutes with credits. So they probably didn't work themselves to death as much as they did, like, I don't know, what's the other big one? Like a new Dragon Ball movie, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I want to issue a correction right now. It was Studio Durian who produced the Look Back film.
Durian.
Apologies to MAPPA. You still suck, but...
apologies to Durian.
Apologies to Durian.
Apologies to
Durian. I don't know if you're as bad as MAPPA.
Who knows? That name does sound familiar. Maybe they worked on something with Science Saru, possibly?
I can see the logo clearly in my head.
Yeah, feels very familiar. Anyway, the movie fucking rocks. It fucking rocks. It's so fucking good. It's probably going to be the best anime movie until the Mononoke movie comes out.
Hell yeah.
Well, let's move on to actual anime now. What do you think about that?
All right, I think that I can talk about some anime. I'm game if you are.
I'm game. I didn't cry at any of these other animes. That's why I wanted to get looked back out for, because it did make me cry a lot. It's very emotional.
All right, can I kick us off here?
Yes, please.
All right. I watched Negative Positive Angler.
Whoa.
The fishing anime.
The fishing anime.
Yes.
And do they not repel each other, negative positive?
No. Well, that's the thing. It's actually referring to an emotional state, not a magnetic polarity.
Oh, I see.
I assume the same thing as you. I thought that we were going to be in for some cool, I don't know, shonen action scenes revolving some kind of magnetic fishing power. Didn't happen. Did not happen. Very disappointed, but it brought me back around because what it is about is slightly, maybe just as interesting. I don't know. You be the judge. So we have our main dude, a piece of shit college student named Sunhiro, and he is just your average total fuck up at life. He's gone full neat at this point.
Uh-oh.
He stopped going to college. He's shut himself in his room because he lost all of his money at the pachinko bars. And then he had to take out loans from the Yakuza to keep playing pachinko. And he lost all that money.
Oh, come on, man. Doesn't he know the odds are terrible?
The odds are, well, I mean, what's the house always wins, right?
Yeah, but, you know, you can play blackjack. That's, you know, your odds are much better.
Is that true? I don't count cards. I'm not a Rain Man.
Then slots? Oh, yeah. Oh, no, much, much better odds.
Well, this is pachinko. This is with the little drop in the little ball. So I don't know about that.
Is pachinko not, it's basically slots, though, right? I feel like pachinko and slots, I mean, that's kind of the same thing.
Kind of. Pachinko is like you get a bunch of these little metal balls and then they drop down, you know, and they filter down kind of a pathway. And if you get one in the winning slot, then you can redeem it for a prize. That's generally how these things work. And he had to take out, you know, shark loans from a Yakuza. Which, by the way, they're doing a weird thing with that. They're playing it very slapstick. I wanna make that clear. This sounds kind of like a dark beginning for this character, and it is. But they're playing it very funny. Like it's lots of gags, lots of pratfalls.
This guy's terrible life is very funny. They're mining his complete tragedy of a life.
Yes.
For humor.
Well, the dynamic that he has going on with like the trio of Yakuza debt collectors that keep following him around is reminiscent of like Ash and Team Rocket from Pokemon.
Oh yeah.
You know, I think at one point they literally get blast off like into the horizon.
Wow. With his fishing powers?
No, not with his fishing powers, with the power of construction equipment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Almost as powerful as fishing.
Maybe more so in some ways. Anyway, this guy's life sucks. He's in debt to the mob. He spends all of his time locked up in his room because he can't go outside or else he's going to get evicted. And everything sucks. And wouldn't you know it, he gets a weird headache one day and goes to the doctor, right? And like, first of all, same day, I'm not sure how they explain this, but he goes to the doctor and same day the doctor's like, oh yeah, you have a giant brain tumor and you only have 2 years to live.
No shit.
And he's like, well, no, he's actually very excited about this. This is uplifting news. This means that he can take out more money without having to pay it back.
Wow. So death isn't real to him. It's just kind of like a nice timeline for him.
It's more like he's messed up his life so much at this point, he's totally dissociated from the concept of a real life or death.
Sure.
And so this sentence is really more freeing than anything else. Right. It is a alleviation of these consequences that he's built up.
And he's a walk-in and he gets a free CT scan.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is what? One benefit of having a socialized medicine system.
I honestly, that is so shocking. That is the most shocking thing so far.
He doesn't even appreciate it. I want to be clear. This guy's kind of a piece of shit. You know,
he sounds like a piece of shit.
He is the 100% the cause of all of his problems, except maybe the brain tumor. I don't know if he's responsible for that.
His dark energy.
But his attitude is definitely not that of someone who's trying to get ahead in life, you know?
Okay.
Anyway, cue a humorous chase scene of him running away from these Yakuza. You know, they're trying to break his legs because he won't pay them back. The thousands of dollars that he's borrowed, and he decides to in a split second he's like, all right, fuck it, I'm just gonna kill myself. If I'm gonna die in 2 years anyway and I'm being chased by the mob and they want to torture me, I'm just gonna jump off this bridge.
Cool.
Which he does. And we all think that's very cool.
That's very cool.
And it's animated very well. I haven't brought that up yet. This is animated, like, absolutely beautifully.
Yeah.
Yeah, real good stuff.
They really went hard?
Yeah. You know what? I have to look it up. I think I read somewhere that the director used to work with Masaaki Yuasa at a different company before he founded Science-Saru.
This is the dude, I'm telling you. Yuasa's out here just like breeding the next generation.
Yeah. And so we get this absolutely beautifully animated scene of him falling into the Tokyo Bay and losing consciousness. And it's like it's animated in these cool, like pastel oil painting kind of multicolored swatches. And all the fish are very abstract and turn impressionistic as he starts to lose consciousness.
Wow.
And then it's all ruined when he gets saved by a gaggle of queer fishermen.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's more or less the plot of Nightbreed now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But replace like weird BDSM monsters with people who are very enthusiastic about fishing.
They're not monsters, they're just gay fishers.
Well, they're not explicitly queer. They're just a group of eccentric weirdos from all walks of life. It's the closest that you can get to like, you know, a queer representation that's not just straight yoi.
Yeah.
And that was a
joke. See. Okay, so this is Studio Nut.
Studio Nut.
Yes, and they are the ones that did the very, very underrated Decadence, which is one of my favorite anime, like pretty much ever of recent memory. That shit deserves way more watches. But yeah, they're great. They're really great. They also did Bull Buster, which we did not like at all, but looked great.
No, we did not like that one.
Yeah.
This is animated way better than Bull Buster was. And so, you know, he gets saved by these fishermen. We've got, what are their names? We have brother and sister pair, Hana and Takaaki, along with a bunch of their friends who, again, like I said, they're from all different. We got like a weird businessman who doesn't talk and a gyaru and like an ex-teacher, bunch of different types. And they all defend him from the Yakuza that are chasing him and teach him the joy of life through fishing. I guess by killing smaller animals than yourself, it reinvigorates your will to live.
Do they eat the fish? This was my question before.
Yes, absolutely.
They do.
We get, you know, depending on the episode, we get a neat little bit about this is how you catch the fish. This is what lure works best on this particular type of fish. And once you've caught it, this is the best way to cook the fish. We get it all wrapped up in a neat little bundle.
So they are eating city fish.
Well, no, they have a boat. They have a boat and they go out into the ocean to fish.
Okay, that was a huge missing piece. Huge.
Yeah, sorry, I left that out. They're not eating city fish. They're not eating inner city fish. They're eating country fish.
All right, that's all I needed to know. That is very important.
No, that's the thing is they have a boat and they go out to the Tokyo Bay breakwater to set up. That's their fishing spot, and it's also a good place to escape the Yakuza, apparently.
Just go out on a boat.
Yeah, no laws out there.
The Godfather taught me that is not a good way. Actually, that is a very bad way. But The Godfather was not anime.
It was not anime. Not yet.
Okay, so final thing. Are you going to continue watching?
I think I am.
Okay.
I do want to see whether or not they do a twist where, you know, his brain cancer magically goes away. That's kind of like the feel that I get with these type of stories is you set it up with this weird dramatic, like, a dramatic setup. Like, oh, you have cancer.
Yeah.
Here's a time limit on how much you have to live. And if it's popular and you run out that amount of time within the story, like, are you going to commit to killing your main character or are you going to cure his brain cancer to keep it going?
No, you do the Doctor Who. You just say, oopsie, we said 12 regenerations. Actually, we meant 15.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you just keep upping the number. Or you do the other thing, which is so common, right? In that, hey, sorry, Mr. Fisherman, we swapped your brain scan for another guy. It's not your tumor, it's his. And then you're free to go. You know, that happens all the time.
I don't know. I want to say one final thing about this. Is it weird that the setup is all of the main characters and all of these, like, this fishing group, they all work at the same off-brand convenience store? Is that a weird setup?
They all work.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many employees can one convenience store support? Usually it's like four.
Well, according to this, at least 7 employees, including our main character.
7?
Yeah, he gets hired on specifically as the guy that has to work while everybody else goes fishing.
I mean, if you think of it as like a co-op, it sounds very fun. Actually, that would be great for me. Like just running a little shop with all your friends kind of sounds awesome.
Yeah, you know, and they sell fishing accoutrement and bait at this convenience store.
Yeah.
So it's really more of like a tiny fishing shop. It's basically a bait shop where you get to hang out with all your friends. That sounds pretty cool, right?
That's the dream, man. If only I had hobbies.
If only I had brain cancer.
If only I had brain cancer and I stopped watching anime and started fishing. Oh, the life I could have.
All right, was negative, positive, angler. I'm going to keep watching it.
Neggy, posy, angler. What's up? What's up next? We've got, 365 days until the wedding. That's a year, if I understand it correctly.
Exactly 1 year. Now, this is another one exactly that I brought up when we were looking at the fall season, and it struck me because the structure of it is very similar to the Edgar Wright TV show from the 90s, Spaced.
Oh, yes. You brought up Spaced. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched the first episode, and it's not like Spaced. It's not funny the way the way Space is like a good comedy.
Yeah. Nobody plays Tomb Raider or Resident Evil 2 on their PlayStation.
Nobody plays Tomb Raider. You know, they also use way less like gay-related slurs in this one, though, so that's a positive.
That's good. That's good. Do they ever take ecstasy and go to the club?
No, not yet. I'm only one episode in, so it's still open.
Oh, okay.
You know, we have 364 more days to figure this out.
Right. So are there going to be 365 episodes?
God, I hope not. Yeah, that would be unforgivable. I don't think they could stretch it out that long. No, well, for those who don't remember when we talked about this last time, this is about two awkward losers who work at a travel agency. And the travel agency, for some reason or another, the boss gathers everybody in one day and he says, hey, we're not doing good financially, so we're pivoting all of our manpower to specifically like trying to get Japanese tourists to go to Anchorage, Alaska.
Wow. Shadow Moses Island.
Yeah. A big Metal Gear Solid tourism industry up there.
Everybody wants to see the big mech, like when people go to see the big Gundam.
You know, they took the big Gundam down. It's not there anymore.
They took it down?
Yeah.
Why? What happened? Did it like crumble or something?
I don't know. They couldn't afford the rent on the space anymore.
Oh no, big Gundam, no.
It's the economy, man.
God damn it. We can't even afford one big Gundam.
Well, we have to replace it with several smaller Gundams. You can't make one big Gundam. You have to use three small Zakus. So they work for this travel agency, and the boss says, "All right, we're gonna at the end of the month, we're gonna announce like one person for promotion who's gonna get sent to work remotely in Alaska." And they say that they're going to give like preference on that to unmarried employees. And so we have our main guy who is just kind of your average awkward dude. I don't know, his thing is that he's just kind of slow. Like we get his inner monologue and he talks about how everyone like it talks too fast for him. Like he thinks about what he's going to say too much, and so by the time he thinks about what he wants to reply with, they've already carried on with the conversation around him.
Okay.
And so he gets like this, he has like a reputation as just being the quiet, awkward dude in the office. He doesn't talk much. And then we have the female lead who is, I don't know. She's Data from Star Trek coded.
What?
Yeah. She's just kind of like,
you saying she's an android?
She's not literally an android, but she has low emotional response and like is constantly like vacantly staring at people with an angry look on her face. And so people think that she's quote-unquote scary.
So she's not data, more like a full-blooded Vulcan.
Yeah, a little bit. Her thing is that she's very into maps. She doesn't like people, but she likes maps. She got into the travel agency business because she thought that she would just be looking at maps all day, like planning trips. She didn't anticipate that she would have to do sales.
So she's an awkward cartographer who's ended up in the wrong position.
Yes.
Okay.
And so together, they realize that if they pretend to be married, then they won't get sent to Alaska. She doesn't want to go to Alaska because she hears that they have big mosquitoes there. And he doesn't want to go to Alaska because the company won't let him take his pet cat with him.
Well, that's fucked up.
It is messed up.
Why would they care?
I can't go to Alaska, Miss Boss Lady. I can't go to Alaska because I have a cat that I take care of. And she says, fuck your cat. Get rid of it.
Cats aren't banned in Alaska. People can have cats in Alaska. They're not illegal.
Yeah, but this is obviously a power move by the company. They're saying,
it's just
you can't have a cat. We own you, bud.
Yeah. What do they call that in Japan? Power harassment or something?
Yeah.
That's fucked up, man.
And so that's the basic setup. You know, she kind of comes up with this plan, and she thinks that she's being very like Death Note, like calculating about it.
Oh, that's cool.
And
that's
so it's like, all right, we're just going to tell the boss, keep it super low key, and just say like, hey, we're married and we've been married for a little bit, but we didn't want to tell anybody because we didn't want to, you know, make a big deal out of it and cause commotion, which is another thing that pops up in like Japanese office culture stuff in anime. I've noticed is like the mere acknowledgement that coworkers may be dating, and sometimes maybe even dating each other, is somehow enough of a scandal to like disrupt the entire workflow of a department.
Right. Yes. This weird conceit that shows up sometimes.
Yeah.
Again, I know you brought up Spaced, but again, I really have to say this is almost beat for beat the plot of the 2009 film The Proposal, starring Ryan Reynolds
and Sandra Bullock. Yes, I'm very familiar.
Yes. This is almost exactly the plot. Sandra Bullock does not want to be deported to Canada, so because she wants to keep her job at this office place, and so she forces a coworker to marry her, fake marry her. This is The Proposal. It is The Proposal.
It's basically that. I think, I don't know. I think the move from Tokyo to Anchorage, Alaska is more drastic than the move from, I don't know, wherever that movie took place to Canada.
Probably New York.
Yeah. So again, a 4-hour drive.
Alaska. It's Alaska.
It's Alaska. Oh my God.
It's Alaska. The Andrew's hometown of Sitka, Alaska.
He lived in Alaska.
Oh my God. They just ripped off The Proposal.
They full on ripped off The Proposal.
I can't believe this.
We've uncovered a scandal here, folks.
This is crazy. Though Ryan Reynolds is exactly the opposite of that guy, though.
Yeah,
I have to say.
Ryan Reynolds seems more of a upbeat, happy-go-lucky type in most roles he plays. Right.
Well, he's like he's the fast talker. He's like he's so anxious that he has to like talk constantly. And then Sandra Bullock, though, is exactly that character of like kind of emotionally not adept and kind of controlling.
Yeah. Yes. That nails it to a T.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the plan goes awry when they try and low key reveal their relationship to the boss lady, and wouldn't you know it, unbeknownst to them, their usually stern and taciturn boss is a big softy at heart and loves marriage and love and weddings and stuff, and so secretly arranges at the end of the first episode to throw a big congratulations party with the whole department announcing their relationship. And so it seems that going forward, the main thrust of the comedy is going to be them trying to kind of play up this fake relationship in front of the rest of the office, well, without trying to slip up.
Yeah, what would that entail? Like, they have to make out in the break room or something? Like, what exactly would change in their behavior at the office?
I imagine it's like that scene from the 40-Year-Old Virgin where they're Steve Carell's coworkers are like talking about titties, and he's like, yeah, it's like a big old bag of sand.
Bag of sand. Yeah. That's really the only thing I remember from that movie.
Yeah,
besides
me too.
The scene where Seth Rogen and the other guy are breaking all of the tube lights.
Uh-huh.
That looks so fun.
I got to do that when I worked at a hardware store. It was pretty fun.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That shit's cool as hell. Okay, so this is just a ripoff of The Proposal. Are you going to continue watching this?
I don't know. Maybe one or two more episodes just to see where they go with this whole fake relationship thing, see how that plays out in the context of an anime versus a hilarious Edgar Wright romp in the 90s. sure. which will forever be in my heart. So I don't know. We'll see. It's not at the top of my list. We'll see. Big middle thumb.
Okay, prediction here. Just final prediction. How many episodes until they like spark?
I think that they're already sparking. At the end of the first episode, they do this whole thing, which it is an entire bit that they ripped off directly from Spaced, where
wow.
Yeah, they have an extended scene where they go on a fake date, making like fake evidence of their existing relationship and coming up with a plausible backstory in case they're questioned about it, ripped directly from the first episode of Spaced.
Wow.
But during that segment, you know, they go to a theme park and they go on a Ferris wheel to take a romantic selfie photo, and that is the first moment where they seem like they have some kind of actual chemistry with each other.
Okay, so not like walking in on her in the bathroom.
No pervert shit so far. Refreshing.
Wow.
Almost.
Okay, that's yeah. good. All right, well, let's move on to some pervert shit then.
All right, I'm into it.
Yeah, we both watched the new remake of Rumiko Takahashi's classic Ranma One Half.
Now, we talked about this already a few episodes ago, and I put this on here. I've still only seen the first episode.
Yeah, me too.
And I've seen it twice now, and I thought maybe certain things would get changed between the first and second viewing.
Uh-huh.
And they did not. And I'm honestly baffled at the puritanical censoring that they have imposed upon Ranma. There's a full Barbie doll everywhere, even in the final product.
Yep. We talked about this a lot. And yes, they did Barbie doll. They did Ken doll. And it is upsetting. Putting that aside, though, let's put that aside because we did talk about it a lot, and that does suck.
I'm just disappointed. It feels wrong.
I know.
Considering the subject matter,
it does suck. I wish it wasn't that way. You think it's one way, but it's the other way.
I wanted to see that teenager's nipples.
We need to complain about this. Is wokeness?
this is another DEI tragedy.
I actually think not showing the nipples is anti-woke.
Oh, you think
that's
it's
my
anti-woke.
Position.
Yeah.
I think it's anti-woke to
you
not
think it's
show the
so
nipples.
Woke that it's gone around the circle and come back as anti-woke.
Yeah. I think it would be woke to show butt cracks, and it's actually hiding them as anti-woke. I'm staking out that position.
Wow.
Putting that aside just for a second.
I'm not sure how I can, but all right.
I'm really confused because I really like this. I think they are really, really faithful to Ranma, like the original animation and the manga. But that confuses me because it seemed like this would be a good opportunity to do something new with a classic. And I don't want to hate on it, because it didn't like revolutionize Ranma, but it really feels like they could have done, you know, they could have done something like something different. But it was so faithful that it was like, oh my God, it took me back in time to like when I got the fucking VHS tape of the first episode. It really took me back. But I liked it. I liked it a lot.
It's definitely doing something to capture that early 90s, late 80s anime feel.
Yeah.
Something about it is still, it's too crisp for me to fully get that same like aura that I associate with that older stuff, you know?
With the early 90s stuff?
Yeah, it needs to have that weird, it needs to have the grain, it needs to have the saturation bleed.
Yeah, the grit.
Yeah, but in terms of what they've done with modern animation and the color palettes that they use and the way everything is animated and how it all comes together. It looks beautiful. I'm really into it. And I like the way all of the character designs and their costumes and the way they've colored them. It makes everything pop really, like, really strikingly.
Yes. And I'm really excited because, you know, they introduce a huge gaggle of new characters, like, very quickly. And the fight scenes look, like, great, at least in this first episode. And they just, at least, in the original, they just get better and better. Like, the original has some of the best fighting animation of, like, any 90s anime. So there's a lot to live up to. But in this first episode, they definitely captured the spirit. And it looked fucking great. It looked great.
Well, if other releases this season have taught us anything, we shouldn't judge anything by the first episode.
You're right. I mean, we shouldn't. that is a big pitfall here. But it seems like you can't fuck up Ranma if you are just redoing Ranma. I feel like you're treading a pretty safe path there.
Well, that's the era we're in. I think that specifically we are seeing a lot of very safe remakes coming out, and some stuff that is genuinely doing new, like adding new value to a remake IP. You know, I like that Resident Evil 4 remake. I like the Resident Evil 2 remake. But aside from that, I think we're seeing a lot of a more conservative trend in the fact that all of this stuff are remakes to begin with, right?
We are deep in the remake era.
Yeah.
And it's hit anime very hard.
Real bad.
Expect more remakes.
Yeah.
I haven't even looked at the next season, but I bet there's at least two remakes in it. All right, let's move on. That's Ranma. The next one is sort of a surprise that it got an anime to begin with, because this is something I read at the behest of actually one of my watch partners.
Hmm.
We have... Let me get the full name. It's on this list. Where's the pervert shit? I'm clicking on the pervert tab. Oh, here we go. We have Raisei wa Tanin ga Iie. Yakuza fiance : Raisei wa Tanin ga Iie. Yakuza fiance. Damn. Why did you watch this?
I was intrigued by the cover, and everyone keeps telling me that I should watch Way of the House Husband, so I assumed it was going to be somewhat similar to that, but it's not, I don't think.
No, it's not. Not at all. No,
no.
It is nothing like that.
It's nothing like that. This is, I was actually pleasantly surprised by how fucking off the wall, or not off the wall, but like off the rails this plot goes, like in the last 5 minutes.
Yes, so, even in the first episode.
Yeah. So we have our main girl, and she's the granddaughter of the Osaka Yakuza clan. I cannot remember the clan name, but the big motherfuckers that run Osaka, right?
Yeah.
And to maintain the peace, he sends off his granddaughter to Tokyo to live with and potentially date and marry the grandson of his rival clan, that's the Tokyo clan.
Yeah. Let's be real, because this is that kind of show. He pimps out his own daughter to appease a fucking mob family in Tokyo.
Well, okay, so obviously they're playing it up like, you know, arranged marriages in royal courts of old, right? But, like, these guys are criminals. They establish that very clearly and very early.
They're pimps and drug dealers.
Yeah, they're pimps and drug dealers and killers. And he's like, yeah, you can have my granddaughter as long as we don't have a mob war.
Yeah.
And so he sends her off to Tokyo to Orin High School, by the way, which for some reason I assumed was a fake high school, like for that one anime, Orin High School Host Club.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess it's actually a real elite high school for rich people in Tokyo.
That's a real Tokyo high school.
I'm gonna double check that.
But it's, let's make sure.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's weird that you, it's the same thing. Okay, well, cursory glance seems to indicate that it is a fake high school, but I'm just going to assume that Yakuza Fiancé now shares a universe with Orin High School Host Club.
Yeah, they're crossed universes.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, wait, is that a real place? Are they referencing like a real high school for rich kids? Apparently not.
It's just shorthand for extremely rich asshole school.
Yeah, yeah, preppy school.
Yeah.
Where they wear beige blazers instead of sailor uniforms or whatever.
Yes. And femboys are held up as the academic
standard.
Wait,
no, that's the other one. That's the other one.
Oh, wait. No, which one are we talking about?
So back to Yakuza Fiancé.
Oh, that
she,
one.
She arrives at the school and meets this guy, right? And he seems like kind of normal, which is not a huge surprise to her because she's the granddaughter of a Yakuza boss and she's normal. Like, why would she be nervous about meeting this kid? And he's like, yay, don't worry about it. Like, I get it. Arranged marriages are weird in this day and age. Let's just humor our grandparents. We'll play along and just kind of feel this thing out. Like, no commitments, whatever. And she's like, okay, yeah, that sounds all right. I can deal with that. Up until the point where she decides to go off on her own at night in Tokyo, in the city, and gets accosted by thugs who are...
Which apparently is a 100% chance of happening if you are a woman by yourself in an anime wandering through the city. This happens every single time we have ever seen a lady on her own. This seems like a really bad place.
Yeah, yeah, not fun.
Not good.
Glad I'm not a lady.
The boys stay winning.
And so she's about to get brutally assaulted by these thugs. and the what's his name, the grandson of the Tokyo boss, her fiance, shows up and brutally beats these three men within an inch of their lives and then threatens them to leave town should the Yakuza come and finish the job for him.
Yes.
And that is her first taste that, like, oh, wait, this guy is not a normal kid. He's actually a violent psychopath.
Oh, he's a psycho.
And he likes being a Yakuza. He's into it.
Why? What? He very easily beats three guys on his own. I know it's just for plot expediency, but, like, wouldn't he get his fucking ass, like, trounced?
I don't know.
What is it implying, right? That he has the strength of 10 men because he's a Yakuza?
Well, okay. I mean...
this doesn't matter at all. This is, like, the most piddling detail.
If this was a smart production, I think that we could surmise that maybe him being a grandson of a mob boss and her just happening to be accosted by three thugs, you know, on the one time that she goes out by herself at night, and him just happening to be in the area. Well, I guess he didn't happen to be here. They were out on a date and she walked away from him.
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah, he was there.
He was probably watching it happen.
Yeah, but I don't know. He either let it happen and came in, you know, conveniently to save the day, or maybe he told those guys to go after her and then... and then came in. So I don't know. That's where we get the reveal that he is in fact full in on that mafia lifestyle and he likes it.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's cool and awesome.
He's a
and
freak.
It gives him a big old boner to kill people.
Yeah. He's pretty into it. I just think, you know, the way I would write that scene is like, he like gets his ass kicked, but holds his own. And then she's like, oh my God, he's like a hero, actually. And then he turns around and he's like, you dumb bitch, you got to sell yourself to make up for what happened to me. That's how I would write that scene. I think that's more interesting.
I think that's a little bit more cynical take of it, a little bit more Rob Zombie, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's fine. I think it's fine the way they did it in the show.
The way that they do it, but the setup is correct because this is a psychosexual drama where two characters essentially like abuse each other in escalating ways.
Well, that's what I was leading up to. It's we get the twist at the end. You know, she sees this violent behavior that he gleefully partakes in, and it very reasonably scares her the fuck away. And she calls her grandma's like, "Grandpa, I don't like this dude. He's a fucking psychopath. I want to go back to Osaka." And her grandpa's like, "Yeah, that's not gonna happen. I sold you, remember? So." Let's just make this work, and why don't you actually become exactly the woman that he wants you to be and then break his heart after a year? And then that'll be cool, right? And she's like, I guess.
Yeah, it's a weird setup.
Yeah.
Weird setup.
And so I guess that's what I left off. When after he saves her and reveals his psychopathic behavior, that's when he's like, you know what? You know, I thought that I could play nice and like have fun and do this with you, but you're actually really boring and too normal for me. I need a psycho Joker boss bitch who's on my level, who can fucking tell me what to do.
I'm a Joker in looking for my Harley Quinn.
No, he's a Harley Quinn looking for his Joker, his Lady Joker.
I'm Harley Quinn looking for my Lady Joker.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? So relatable. Oh my God.
When you put it that way, it's literally what every guy wants.
Yes. Hey, if you're a Lady Joker, like hit me up. I'm on Blue Sky. You tweet at me. Seriously.
He's desperate, folks.
I'm desperate. This is a really weird one. I read some of it and it does just become like escalating psychosexual drama where these characters sort of like, you know, physically and emotionally abuse each other. And if you're like into sort of like light BDSM stuff, like this is the romance for you.
That sounds like a pretty good endorsement.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to continue watching it cause it gets very weird, but, I don't know. It's at least it's compelling.
Well, at least it's that.
Yeah. Are you going to keep watching?
I think I am. I want to see where this goes.
I might. I think I probably will end up because, again, like I said, this is one of my watch partner's favorites. So we'll probably keep watching this.
I think I know exactly who you're talking about, and that makes sense.
Yes. And, we'll watch it at least until it hits some truly upsetting events. We'll see how long it takes. Okay, the next one. Big premiere. Chikyo no undo ni Tsuite, which is orb: on the movements of the earth. This is
the flat earth anime.
This is the Polish anime that we talked about a Polish kid.
Okay, I remember. Yes. Yeah. This is the one about the Inquisition trying to prove that the earth, the sun revolves around the earth.
Well, I had a really good time because the episode's 23 minutes. And after the first 5 minutes, I kept going, heliocentrism. And then, as the episode escalated, in the final moments, one of the big, like, grand wizard characters points up to the sky. And in tandem...
Hey, you can't use the phrase grand wizard.
He kind of is, though. I mean, in the context of the show, he is a grand wizard. He points up, the Gandalf points up to the sky, and in tandem with me, he yells, heliocentrism. We yelled it together and I had so much fun doing that that I kind of don't know what the rest of the show is. There was like a kid who kind of secretly is into astronomy and he's trying to hide it from the church, and that's kind of most of it. He meets a mysterious Gandalf who teaches him about heliocentrism.
That Gandalf's name, Copernicus.
Copernicus. And yeah, I had a lot of fun yelling heliocentrism over and over again. The Polish kid is sort of like a Death Note kid. That was the surprise for me.
He's a Death Note kid?
He's sort of a Dio from Phantom Blood, actually. He's a scheming orphan who's trying to make his way up.
Oh, I see. He's a Steer Pike type.
Yeah, he's exactly a Steer Pike. And he's being tempted onto the other path toward like something he truly believes in. What he wants to do is just trick and manipulate everyone around him until he has a high position in the church so he can just live lavishly.
Classic Catholic move.
Yeah, exactly. But the temptation of heliocentrism is pulling him away from his natural instincts of manipulation.
I want to be a grifter and a piece of shit, but science is just pulling me too hard.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of funny. It's like I'm too smart to like end up with I don't know, a cushy church job somewhere in like central Poland. I need to study the stars, and I've met my Gandalf.
I can relate to the sentiment that being right is oftentimes more satisfying than being rich.
It really is. I mean, and the thing is, to the arrogant, to the truly arrogant who have yet to taste humbleness, being right is truly intoxicating. And in this case, it really is. He is so intoxicated by being correct. He is willing to risk burning on a fucking stake in the town square.
What's that Onion article? The worst guy you know makes a good point.
Yes. Tragic. Worst guy you know makes point.
Yeah.
It's intriguing in that way. I kind of want to see whether this goes into like more of a dramatic way where it's sort of him versus the church. That kind of feels like what we're setting up. Or if it goes into, as anime usually does, sort of like a hyper-focus on somebody's, like, hobby, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we get a bunch of astrology stuff. So I'm going to watch the next episode for sure just to see, like, what path we're going to take.
Wait, you keep saying astrology. Do you mean astronomy?
Well, he starts off with astrology because it's all fake bullshit.
Oh, I see.
And then he meets Gandalf, and Gandalf is like, what you know about the world is incorrect. Don't you want to know what the world really is?
Hey, you little pea-brained idiot. You don't know anything.
He's got an astrolabe hanging off his fucking belt, and Gandalf's like, give me that. It's very funny.
You're going to break it.
Let me show you how to use that. Look, heliocentrism.
He's like, what? Heliocentrism.
Heliocentrism, boy. It's really fun. It's really fun to just yell heliocentrism throughout the episode. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to watch the next episode of that. It's weird. Next show, Demon Lord 2099.
So this is the sequel to Spider-Man 2099, right?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh.
That would be so much fun. This show is not fun in any way, really. Now, you hear Demon Lord 2099, and you think, oh, shit. It's like a cyberpunk show, but like a demon lord has to like navigate a cool cyberpunk dystopia, right?
Now, that would be the natural assumption, but can I take a guess at maybe what it ended up being?
Please.
Now, could it have something to do, maybe, possibly, with a demon lord waking up in the future and starting a live stream account?
We don't know yet whether he starts live streaming. there's a very big possibility that he might, though.
I was assuming it was doing a Mayanaka Punch type thing, just based off of the trailer that I saw. And it is about a demon lord waking up in the cyberpunk future and being like, wow, things sure are different. I wonder how this internet thing works.
Well, it kind of is. This thing actually threw me a couple of curveballs because I pretty much guessed what was going on, like in a large structural sense. Yes, it is. It is a demon lord who is defeated in the fantasy world by a hero, right? And he is put into a 1,000-year slumber. He wakes up 1,000 years later in a completely different cyberpunk world. Now, the first curveball he immediately finds is that this is not just like a cyberpunk world. he wakes up like in Shinjuku and he's like, what the fuck? There's like train stations and stuff. And a character comes up and explains to him that this isn't just 1,000 years in the future. There has been a conjunction of the spheres.
What?
His fantasy land has conjoined with our real world land. This is such an unnecessary complication to this story. It doesn't need to have that, but it does.
So not only did he wake up in his own world's future 1,000 years, but that future is merged with modern day Tokyo.
Yes. So we have like a Witcher style, like conjunction of the spheres where worlds have collided and like destroyed each other. And now 1,000 years later, they've finally kind of started figuring out how to like work together to build a world that's like not a wasteland. And that's the world he wakes up to. That's,
seems a bit optimistic, but okay.
Yeah, it's, I, again, like I said, this is so unnecessary. Like, why is this part of the plot? Doesn't need to happen. The second curveball is, now we're in a sort of, so we're in a shadow. We're essentially, we're now in a shadow run, right?
Okay.
Because we have the fantasy world conjoined with the real world. Yeah. And all the orcs and magic creatures or whatever all have cyberpunk style neck plugs that work as magic conduits. So they have smartphone magic conduits installed into their bodies. So we've got orcs with like magic tech wandering around.
So now everybody has magic powers?
Everybody has magic powers, and essentially they're doled out by iPhones. And so there is a big Apple corporation giving out magic with contracts that if you don't sign a contract, it's about $1,000. If you do sign a contract, you pay maybe, I don't know, $150 a month? That sound reasonable?
Plus the soul of your firstborn child.
Yes, there is also a blood price, of course. It is magic after all. So he realizes almost immediately, oh, like, my powers don't matter anymore. I'm a demon lord, but, like, everybody is a demon lord now, basically.
Oh, fuck.
We have essentially what is the devil is a part-timer merged with Deadmount Death Play. But not fun and not funny.
Hmm. Those are two pretty big categories that I look for in an anime / manga.
Yeah, like all the character designs are extremely generic. The world designs are super generic. The character himself, the Demon Lord, is like a nothing. He's just like a completely fucking cardboard cutout. So there's no fun to have there. We meet a couple of the side characters, but they are also like completely fucking flat. The first one we meet is like the complete like subservient healer girl. Ugh. Whose only character is that she's devoted to the Demon Lord. That's it. The only fun moment we have with her is at the end of the episode, she takes him to her apartment and she's living in a one room apartment without a kitchen.
See,
and she starts crying.
As when he's like, holy shit. As I was on it, this, like, Mayanaka Punch does sound like just the better version of this, because they have a character like that in Mayanaka Punch, but
yeah,
it's much more palatable because the gag is that she's more of like a put upon Renfield type.
Yeah, she's a
who's
Renfield.
Like constantly trying to keep their finances in the green. And so it's a bit more funny when you add like the, I don't know, when you add that dynamic on top of the fact that she's also like, you know, a devoted worshiper of the evil demon.
Yes, of course. Yeah, and you know, this is in episode one. Maybe these get developed later on. I don't know, but this was like a really dry, is like a very dry cracker of an idea that we've seen a bunch of times before, much better. Like, as much as I think the devil is a part-timer is not very good, because I think I said at the time, it completes its entire storyline in 6 episodes and then goes on for like 2 more seasons, which doesn't make any sense to me. But at least in that, like, it has fun with it, right? Like, the devil wakes up, he's like a guy in the world. His Renfield has like a one-room apartment. What do they call it? A 6 tatami mat?
Yeah, something like
apartment,
that.
Something like that. And he's like, I don't even have a bed for you. I'm so sorry, my lord, right? And then he has to, like, get a job at Whack Arnold's. and he realizes, like, it's kind of fun, you know? And then he meets the hero who's reincarnated. And instead of fighting each other, they're just, like, kind of, they're kind of catty, you know, to each other. And, like, all the ideas are done better in that show. And all the, like, dramatic stuff is done better in Deadmount Death Play, which has the same ideas. So this is vestigial, unnecessary. I don't know. It shouldn't exist, I guess I'm saying.
I mean, it's writing the end of a trend of those types of shows, right?
Yeah.
I feel like we've been seeing them for a while now. Because, what, there's another one that just got a second season that's airing right now. It's like the demon lord is a bad roommate, something like that.
He probably would be, yeah. It's a waste of an idea that works pretty well if you just season it right, you know? So yeah. Fuck that show. I'm probably not going to watch any more of it.
No to Demon Lord 2099.
Demon Lord 2099. Thumbs down. All right, next show. This is one I've been reading, and I don't know why. It really feels like brain damage.
This is on your trash list.
This is on a trash list for sure. Goodbye, Dragon Life. Hello, Human Life. I think that's what it's called.
That's my favorite Elton John album. Goodbye, Dragon Life. That's what it would sound like.
Oh, just that?
Yeah, just that. You can remix that. I give you my permission.
Sayonara, ryusei, konnichiwa, jinsei.
Now, I wonder what that translates to directly, because I heard konnichiwa in there.
Konnichiwa, that means hello.
Goodbye, dragon life. Hello, normal human life.
Hello, human life. This is about a like an elder dragon, like in the Dark Souls sense, like a foundational being to reality, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Being killed, much like in Dark Souls, like crumbling and like rebuilding reality because of its absence. And so instead of leaving reality to crumble and like kill everybody, he eventually reincarnates into a baby and becomes a human. Seems reasonable enough.
Man, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, I know. It's right. It seems like the hot thing to do these days.
I wish I could just reincarnate as a baby.
Yeah, and he starts off as a baby. He starts as a level zero baby. And, you know, he grows up normally.
SL level one run through.
Yep, yep. He ends up like level 10 by the time he hits 16. His village has a weird tradition where when you hit 16, you just get an apartment by yourself.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, cool. It's kind of French in that way, to be honest.
Okay, I think I see where this is going. Now, does he retain his Dragon Life memories?
Oh, you better believe it.
And does he retain his massive dragon power?
Hell yeah, he does.
So...
Oh, man, he does.
So what we have is just another... I don't know. Is this even a fantasy fulfillment isekai? Because he was already badass in his first life.
Oh, he was the most badass. He was a foundational pillar of reality.
And so what he's just like, hey, it's cool being a normal asshole, I guess. This is kind of fun.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it, to me, a little more fun and distinct from your regular isekai. Because his whole deal is like, I'm tired of being an all-powerful, all-knowing being. It's, like, exhausting. It kind of sucks. And, like, these little dudes keep coming and trying to kill me, and, like, they can't. I just, like, smush them. I smush them into dust. And it makes me feel bad, because, like, they're just little dudes. It's like ants, you know? When ants come and, like, try to get into your house, you don't hate them, right? When you smush them?
Oh, no, I hate.
You do? You hate them?
Yeah, like with an emotional attachment, I hate them, yeah.
Oh, I don't hate them. I feel bad killing them.
I name them, and then I hate them.
You point them, and you're like, that's Billy Bob, and I'm smashing him.
Pretty much.
Wow.
I feel like it's more satisfying when you give them an identity to wipe out.
Wow, that's... I think you're going to have to work through that on your own. I don't relate. But he feels bad. And so he lets go and he's like, I'm going to take a long vacation, basically, as like some jack off. And he does. And he doesn't use his dragon powers, his dragon knowledge, because he's trying to be just a regular dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the world is all fucked up.
He's doing a pure role play run.
He's doing a role play run for sure. He's doing a fashion run.
Yeah.
But the problem is with his absence as a pillar of reality, like, things are starting to get weird. Other dragons are starting to get stronger because he's gone. Demon portals are opening, sort of like Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Demon portals are just appearing everywhere. Demons are coming out. And so he tries to hide the dragon power, but sometimes he's just got to, like, put the hammer down. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, sometimes you just got to do your job.
Sometimes you just got to do it. You would think that this goes on like a regular isekai where he like develops a harem and all this shit, you know, becomes like the savior of the world. And I think what I like about it, even though I don't like it very much, is that he essentially like marries the first girl he sees.
He says, you are my wife now.
He does. He really does. So in the first episode,
These are the government-appointed anime waifus that we've been begging for.
In episode one, he meets a Lamia, like a sexy snake girl.
Sure.
And very Futurama-like. He's just like, okay, let's do this shit. I wish the fish part was the top and the girl part was the bottom. And he just plays it low key, and eventually, like, he kind of goes on misadventures where he kind of accidentally has to reveal to certain people that he is a dragon, but he wants to keep it low key. So it's, I don't know, it's to some people's tastes. I don't know why I keep with it, because it is very bland, but it's not offensive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not How to Pick Up Girls in the Dungeon.
Well, I mean, let's hope not, lest we want 5 seasons of it.
Yeah. But the animation is not good enough. It's just not good enough, you know?
I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to get renewed, you know? I think we're in a race to see who can have the worst animation and still be on air.
Well, that'll lead me to the next two, because the next show is Magi Lumiere, Magical Girls Incorporated.
Yeah, you've talked about this before.
I've talked about this
manga?
A lot before. Yes, this manga has been going for a long time, like over 100 chapters. This is about what if magical girls had to work for startup companies that were run by like weirdo VC guys.
So what if magical girls, but also capitalism?
Magical girls, but capitalism. That is really it. Eventually, it develops sort of a personality. But I like this manga, but it takes a while. I think this will die on the vine. Because the animation is, like, fine, but it's not breathtaking. It's not a reason to watch the show.
Uh-huh.
And it will take, by my estimation, at least 12 episodes to develop a personality.
That's a whole core.
Don't say that. So I think Magi Lumiere is not gonna make it.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's gonna make it onto your rewatch list, at least.
Yeah, I know. It's like I am reading it, so I feel obligated to keep going, but I don't think it's gonna make it. But it's fine. You know, it's a girl who is a fresh grad, you know, and these recruiters all call them fresh meat.
I don't like that. That's sinister.
They're very easy to take advantage of. That's kind of the whole undercurrent of this thing, is like,
well,
college grads are very easy to take advantage of.
I mean, they're obviously doing a thing about pop idols, right? They've imposed the idol industry on like how magical girls work.
Yeah, kind of.
I thought that was like the explicit text they were going for.
They're not as much. I mean, they're really office workers, you know, or like plumbers.
They're a trade industry.
Yeah, there's a very lunch pail aspect to being a magical girl in this world that I am attracted to. I think that is cool.
But it's like that famous photo of the construction workers on the high beam eating lunch, right?
Yes, yes.
But it's magical girls eating bentos or rice balls or something.
Yes, on their brooms, like 100, 1,000 feet in the air. Yeah. Exactly. That is what it is.
That sounds bleak.
You know, if you read it through the lens of like, man, magical girls are captured by like VC startup money, and they are like incorporated into the capitalist machine as laborers, it is very bleak. It's actually kind of scary.
There should be an entire arc about like a startup company that upsets the whole industry by making a like an Uber Eats style app for the magical girls, and suddenly they're all competing as independent contractors.
Oh boy, you should read the manga if you like that idea. Like, you seriously, like, it gets there. It does get there.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some dark shit.
See, I could write a manga. I could be an author.
Oh, we say that all the time. We could easily crush this shit. We're so good at this. Give us one chance. Okay, I have one more show.
All right, let's round it out. It better be a good one.
It's, fuck.
oh, no.
This is a good anchor because this is Lockdown Zone Level X. I was really excited about this because, first of all, that's a cool name.
Is it?
I think we can all agree.
Is it a cool? It sounds like something Elon Musk would come up with.
Lockdown Zone : Level X?
Yeah.
Come on, that's cool. That sounds cool.
No, it does not. No, it does not. It sounds like the worst level of a Metal Gear game.
Well, it got me excited. I got excited, okay? And then I read the premise, and the premise is like, it plays it a little close to the vest, which I do like. Again, I like it. And it sounds a little bit like a death game. You know, people locked into an apartment building that they can't escape, mm-hmm. and they have to like follow weird orders. Because there's like something hunting them, maybe. All that sounds cool. That all sounds great.
Bro, that's just living in an apartment with a landlord.
Yeah, don't make any sound after 10 p.m.
Yeah, you've never lived in an apartment, but it like the sound of the landlord just walking the halls like Pyramid Head, dragging their debt collector bag.
It's a big bag full of coins.
Yeah.
You must pay the rent. But I can't pay the rent.
Dickensian style.
Yeah. But we watched it, and first warning sign, the episode is 10 minutes long.
Hmm. Okay. So it's a mini-sode.
Mini-sode. Second danger sign, about half the episode is text messaging. We look at an iPhone screen, and we're texting between the main character and the main character's mom. But they're both just vaguely texting at each other like, hey, what's going on, mom?
Now, is it just text on screen, or is it like someone reading it out?
No, it's just text on screen. We're reading it.
Okay. All right. Well,
yep.
Got to save money somewhere.
Yep. And then the third danger sign is when it's not text messages, it's essentially a motion comic. It's a motion comic.
Oh.
Yep.
Well, that's disappointing.
Got tricked again.
Disappointing.
Which wouldn't be, like, super bad, except, like, nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
At all. Nothing happens. It's text messages about something vague happening in the apartment building. Literally, half the text messages are the main character going, Mom, what's happening? And the mom going, hold on, I'll tell you later. And it's like, what? What the fuck? What? You gotta give me something.
Hey, wait. Boss, I have an amazing idea on how we can save production money on this series. Let's just not have the characters do anything or go anywhere.
Also, they won't say anything, and we won't show them most of the time.
I love it. Sounds perfect.
You're a genius. I'm really disappointed. I am really disappointed. Also, because if you don't take into account the animation, I do think some of the character design looks cool. But it's just so, it's like, oh, you're breaking my heart here. If you like 10-minute webisode motion comic stuff that doesn't really go anywhere in the first episode, this is the show for you.
It's gotta be up somebody's alley.
Yeah. Otherwise, this is a no watch, and wow, That's the premieres for...
That's our fall 2024 anime lineup.
2024 anime.
So what was our count here?
Season.
I am going to keep watching Negi Positive Angler.
All right.
I am going to keep watching 365 Days Until the Wedding for now.
Okay.
I am going to keep watching Yakuza Fiancé.
Me too. So that's four.
Yeah. Well, three.
I am going to watch.
Yeah, four.
I am going to watch Ranma. So that's mm-hmm. five. I am not going to. I'm going to probably watch Orb again. So that's six. And, oh boy. I guess that's it.
Well, okay. Oh, six out of 10 ain't bad.
Well, there's dupes in there.
There's some dupes in there. I assume that you're going to watch Look Back again, given the chance.
Oh, and I'm going to watch Dandadan, of course.
Well, yeah, that's without saying. Number one show of the season. We're not missing out on Dandadan. Fucking rules.
Yeah, I'm not going to stop watching Dandadan. I have to say, somebody said that Blue Box is actually really good. The premise put me off really bad, but I might throw that on the list later.
Yeah, I've heard some buzz about Blue Box. Not sure what it's all about, but
it's like a rom-com about characters like badminton.
Is it about basketball?
Basketball and badminton and shit. But I think it's mostly just a rom-com.
All right. Well, wow. I guess that's it.
That's
beautiful and handsome listeners.
Oh, I might watch that Blue Exorcist too. Okay. Anyway, that's anime.
All right, so you know the drill. Go out, follow us on Blue Sky, like the episodes, give us stars, do all that stuff.
Donate to the Patreon.
Yeah, donate to the Patreon.
Donate to the Ko-fi.
Yeah, the Ko-fi, Patreon.
I posted my Venmo.
What's the other one?
I posted my Venmo on the Blue Sky.
Listen, I'm downtown most days with a basket, just kind of begging for handouts. It'd be great if you saw me there.
Yeah, I'm playing Grateful Dead songs on the corner with my beat up acoustic guitar.
Okay. All right. Heliocentrism.
Heliocentrism.
Bye. Bye. 300 dollars on magic sleeves because of the pills.